week's shiur, sponsored by the Wine Glass. Le'uli Nishmas Yaakov Yitzchak Rav Chaim. Parshas Vayechi. There's a famous individual here in Eretz Yisrael who was involved quite heavily in the union of Akira Berchokim, bringing people back to Yiddishkeit. His name is Rav Noach Hertz. Might have heard him. He actually came here to speak before. And he was a pilot that his plane was shot down, and he was held in Syria, captive. He was in captivity there. So he has obviously a story to tell. He was not firm at the time, and eventually became firm, and now he's Makar of others. So he brings a certain Musar idea, which he picked up from his days as a pilot. He says there's a certain thing that the pilots go through every now and then. It was very dangerous. Called spatial, as in space, spatial disorientation. What is that? It says the pilots, they're flying at night, so they go up, you know, above the clouds. They're in the pitch dark. And as a result, very often, they get disoriented, as the name is, spatial disorientation. They get disoriented, and they lose feeling of where they are, what direction they're going. They're going up, they're going down, they're going horizontal. They go out of focus. This is caused because they're in, you know, the abyss. There's total darkness, there is nothing around them, and it causes a certain effect on them. And unfortunately, it leads to, as they said, 90% of accidents of planes, plane crashes, are because of this. Okay, because they lose this, they get disoriented, and what happens is that they might see, let's say, the stars, and they feel, they get disoriented, and they think those stars are really lights down below, okay, and they think that they're heading, you know, towards the star, but they think they're heading towards the down below, and they put the plane in the other direction. Meanwhile, they're going downwards, and they end up crashing. So the companies that produce planes, of course, they know about this, and so what do? They created a certain device, they put in the cockpit, where there's a metal ball that sits at the bottom of this dish or whatever, and the pilot, once he feels the oriented, he thinks he's going in the wrong direction, going up and down or whatever, all he has to do is look at this device, and if he sees the metal ball at the bottom, that means he's going fine, he's going straight. In other words, if he feels he's disoriented, so he just looks over there, and he can see that he's okay, just by looking at this ball that's on the bottom. He sees the ball's not in the bottom, okay, then he has to adjust. The problem is that this feeling is so real to them that they feel they're going in the wrong direction or headed down or whatever. It's so real that they don't trust this device. And they think there's something wrong with the device. They see the ball at the bottom. They say it's broken. It can't be that I'm going straight. Right? And as a result, again, they make the adjustment and goodbye. So the companies do this. So what do? They make two of them. Make a backup. Right? So just in case, they look at one, they see the ball on the bottom, everything's okay, but they say, no, it can't be, I can't be going straight. So they look at the other device, that's also on the bottom, okay, what are the chances that they're both broken? And then, so they can see they're okay, and they get their focus. Unfortunately, though, right, even that doesn't work, right, sometimes. And they can see that, they see both of them, the balls are at the bottom, everything, and still, it's so real to them, this feeling, that they say, it's not working, both are broken, I know I'm going in the wrong direction, they steer the plane the other direction, and boom. This is how many, many of the accidents, as we said, are caused. So, he says, we can learn from here some mystery. He says, that's it, that's often how the Yetzer Hara works. A person has his ideas, has his, like, shita, you know, what she thinks is right, preconceived notion, you know, of what's right. And as a result, what happens sometimes, even though he's totally off, but he's so convinced that this is the right way, that he's heading in the wrong direction, he doesn't realize it. And then, but since it's so ingrained in him, the sheep, because that's what he thought was the right way, you can show him anything, you can give him Musar Shemuzin, you can show him Sfarim, Shulchan Aruch, whatever you want, I'm right. Right? Everything's wrong. Like the pilot, right? Everything's showing that, no, they're wrong. I'm right. I'm going the wrong direction. This is the right direction, what I'm saying. So that's unfortunately that the Yetzer Hara gets us that way. We see an example of this in this week's Sedra. Yosef, the tzaddik, brings his son from Menashe to get a bracha from his father Yaakov. So we're all familiar with the famous psukim. V'yikach Yosef et shnehem. He brings his two sons, Ephraim b'mino mismol Yisrael, v'es Menashe b'smolo mimin Yisrael v'yagesh elav. So who's the bechor? Menashe. So since Menashe is Bechor, of course Yosef says, my son Menashe is Bechor, he has to get the Iker Bracha. So he brings him on his left hand, presents him in front of his father, where therefore his father is facing him, so it's to his right. So in Yaakov's front of Yaakov's right hand is the Bechor Menashe, and in front of his left hand is Ephraim. So that's how, you know, Yosef sets it up, so to make sure that, you know, his son, the Menashe and Bechor, gets the Iker Bracha on the right hand of Yaakov. Okay, so what happens? Yishlach Yisrael es yimino, v'yashes al Rosh Ephraim. What's a year? V'et mismol al Rosh Menashe, sikel es yadav Menashe b'chor. What happens? But all of a sudden, Yaakov, you know, throws Yosef for a, you know, fast one, and he sikel es yadav. He goes like this. He takes his ikur, brach his right hand, he puts it on Ephraim, and his left hand, he puts on Menashe, the b'chor. He switches his hands. Okay, meaning, obviously, Yaakov had some, you know, other things in mind. So then we see something fantastic. What happens? Okay, he gets a certain bracha, whatever. And then it says, V'yar Yosef ki yashiz aviv yad yimino al Rosh Ephraim. Yosef noticed, you know, his father mixed up his hand, put his hand over there. And V'yera v'enav, he's upset. No, that's not right. My son, I'm not supposed to get the Iker bracha on the right hand. So what does it say? Vayismuch yad aviv lehasir otam mi'al rosh Ephraim al rosh Menashe. He grabs his father's hand, and to take it off, yank it off, get it, no, it goes over here, and to put it back on Menashe's head. And Menashe's head. Vayomer Yosef el aviv, lochein avi, ki zeh bechor, si mi michal rosho. Says, you're making a mistake. Menashe's the bechor, put your hand on his. So then said the Yemen Avid, his father said, no, nothing doing, I'm fine, it's true that, and Menashe will be Chashev, and Rashi says, the Gidon's going to come from him, good, but Lamaitz, Bula Mechiva Katon, Ephraim Yigdal Mimenu, but Zoro Yemelo Agoyim, Yeshua is going to come from him, he's going to give the Torah, etc. So, in other words, that's what I meant today. So I saw once the Chidushi Alev, he says a fantastic thing, what's going on over here. Yosef, you know, brings his son what he thought, okay, I can understand. He thought, you know, his Bechor will get there from Bracha, brings him to the right of Yaakov. Okay, I guess that's understandable. But as soon as he sees his father go like this, what should he have said? Oh, I guess my father has other plans. Finished. I mean, Yaakov's his father, he's got a Lador, you know. He goes like that. It wasn't, you can see, he wasn't just, you know, some, he can, you know, with Kavana, he purposely crossed his hand, meaning he has other ideas. Okay, you thought Menashe was going to get the Ephraim. Obviously not, finished. But Yosef, no, what does he do? He grabs his father's hand, wants to yank it off, you know, and then put it on, and he says, no, Elohein Avi, this is not the right one, it has to go here. I remember when my wife's uncle, Shiaburi, that he was from the Holocaust, and he said, he remembers in Europe, he said that as a kid, it was totally, totally, 100% usher to touch your father. And it was his father, you know, the head of the mishpacha. He said, we wouldn't dare just to, you know, touch our father. Not one touch. We touch it before we get over the head. And here's what is Yosef doing? He's grabbing his father's hand, yanking it off, putting it, well, how can you do such a thing? Right? Obviously, Yaakov had other ideas, and he told him. He said, no, I know he's going to be great, etc. Yeah, he had his plan, and he had to tell him that. Well, what was Yosef doing? So he said, we see from here, basically this idea. When Yosef brought his two sons, he was so convinced in his mind that this is the right way, that when Yaakov did something else, it can't be. Your father's greater than you. He's the God of lie. He knows what he is. It can't be. Because he already had it in his mind. This is the way it's supposed to be. It was very hard to take it out, like we said. You know, you look at the machines. This one says this one. This one. I don't care. It's all wrong. I'm right. I can't be there wrong. This is the way I see it, and I thought about it, and everybody else is wrong. And therefore, Yosef felt the same way. He says this. He had his plan, and therefore, when he said, even if it was his father, even a man yanking off his head, he goes, I got to do it. Just so I'm right. It can't be. My father's making a mistake. Until finally, you know, his father convinced him otherwise. So what's the pitaron? What's the solution, right? So what do you do? Okay, you know, you have your ideas, and it's very hard to separate yourself from them, and you think you're right, and so how do you get on course? So Hertz, he says that once he was at a levaya for a pilot who also, you know, died tragically in this way, and he was speaking to one of his friends, and he explained to him what happened. He says, we went out on a mission, and I was in one plane, this person, you know, was just killed, he was in the other plane, and we took off together. So, okay, we're flying, and we get, you know, it's nighttime, again, go over the clouds. As long as we're flying, you know, over, you know, you can see the country below you, you see the lights, so everything, it's exactly where you are, so you don't get, you know, this disorient. But when we, you know, left the, you know, went over the horizon, we saw, you know, everything was dark, and we're flying, and I noticed that my friend in the other plane saw that it looked like he was losing his, you know, was getting disoriented. I said, uh-oh. So I immediately contacted him by radio, and I said, are you okay? And he says, I think so, I think we're going the wrong direction. He says, uh-oh, okay. He says, listen, you know, he realized what was going on, so he says, do me a favor. He says, I'm staying with you. You follow me. Keep me in sight. So you think as long as he's an eye shot and he's following him, he'll be okay. And he said, Baruch Hashem, it was good for that. You know, he was following me. I saw it. He was in, you know, it was, and that kept him steady. So finally we went for quite a while. And then I saw that it looks like he was okay, he was steady. And so I contacted him again. I said, are you okay? You feel good? He says, yeah, you're not disoriented anymore. He said, no, I feel I'm fine, okay. I said, okay, good. And then I, you know, went my own way, left him. And unfortunately, I guess I shouldn't have done that. I left him a little bit too early. He really was still disoriented, and he went off, and he crashed. So Rav Hertz said, what do we see from here? Again, that little lesson. As long as he, you know, had his guidance, as long as he had, you know, who to follow, then the disorientation didn't affect him. It's only when he left him and by himself, that's when he crashed. And so too, how do we get on track and we don't get disoriented by our Yetzer Hara? Is we have to follow. Well, we follow our Rebbe, follow our Gedolim, right? We have the Rav there in front of us. So then, even if we ourselves have our crazy ideas, we think this, we think that, but as long as he's in our, you know, with an eye shot and we're following him, he's the Rav's there to keep us on track. That's the, he says, that's the lesson that we can learn from here. Reminds me of, there's a cute Maisa, there was once these Hasidim, and two Hasidim. One had a problem of Parnassa, and he needed help. And his friend, he had his own problems. He had a headache or something, a very sore head, and he couldn't get rid of it. It's a terrible headache. So they decide to both go to the Rebbe. So they go into the Rebbe, and the Gabbai's there, and he says, okay, what can I do for you? So, you know, Reuven says, well, I got problems, Parnassa, blah, blah, blah. Shimon says, yeah, I got this splitting headache I can't get rid of, I need help. So he says, okay, so the Gabbai goes into the Rebbe. And he comes out, and he says, okay, here, the Rebbe wrote Jewisha Patek, you know, so he gave Reuven his and Shimon his. But unfortunately, the Gabbai switched to Ptakim. So the one that had a problem with Parnassa, he got this Patek to put this cold compress on his head, right? And the one who had this terrible headache got a Patek to stay till him. Okay, so that wasn't so bad, you know, he had a headache to stay till him. But the other guy's like, what, you know, I'm going to walk with a cold compress on my head. You know, what's pshat? So he said, okay, but Lamaisa, the Rebbe said, and everybody looked at him and goes, oh, so what did the Rebbe say? Well, I put a cold compress on my head. He's walking around with cold compress. But didn't you have a problem with Parnassa? He goes, yeah, but that's what the Rebbe said. But the schutz there, Munas HaChamim, right, they follow what the Rebbe said. So even though, whatever, it doesn't make sense to them and they don't understand, as long as they following what the Rav said, said there, and sure enough, they were both healed. It's chus of following the Rav. One, a Litvish Maisa. There's a fellow I heard he's from, actually, from Kiryat Sefer. There was a bachur that something happened to him, and he had his face became all, disoriented, disfigured, thank you. It became disfigured. And it looked terrible. The whole face went disfigured. I didn't know what it was. Some palsy or something could be. But it looked terrible. Everybody, like, you couldn't even look at the guy. He looked so ugly, you know, with his disfigured face. So they went to this doctor, that doctor, whatever, and it didn't, nothing worked. So they went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, and asked him, what should we do? So went up to Rav Chaim, and he said, look, my son, look how he looks, it's terrible, and we went to the doctors, whatever. So Rav Chaim looks at the boy, and he says, well, listen, he says, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Gemara, Masechta Shabbos says that Hadart the Panim, it says Zakan. Like that the beautiful face is a beard. Right? A beard gives you a beautiful face. Okay? So he said, are you willing to mekabel on yourself to grow a beard? So the Bachar is like, beard, nobody has a beard in Shiva, I don't know. So then the father's like, come on, Rav Chaim said, grow a beard, he can help you, So he's still like, this is new, come on. So finally the boy said, okay, fine. So, okay, yeah, you accept you're going to grow a beard? Yes, I'll call myself to grow a beard. So he says, okay. And Rav Chaim gave a nice bracha, you should be healthy, it should go well, it's fine. Okay, shook his head. So as he's walking down the stairs to Rav Chaim's place, all of a sudden he started feeling something in his face, and within 20 minutes he was totally cured. Totally cured. So that's a litvish mice. It's a story of this. There was once a woman. She was totally non-religious, chilania completely, and she was once going for a walk with her daughter. And they're walking by the school, and it happens to be like a Beis Yaakov school. And the mother kind of stopped there and looked and watched all girls there, playing in the yard and teachers and stuff like that. And it made a very big impression on her. I said, look, you saw how the kids are so, nice and orderly and calm and polite and derech eretz, And, she thought, I want my kid to learn here. I want my kid to be like this. So she approached the teacher that was in the courtyard, with the kids, and said, listen, I'd like to, sign up my kid in this school. So the teacher looks at her, it's like not covering her hair or anything like that, Says, I don't think your daughter would be accepted here. He says, why not? He says, well, you don't even cover your hair. How can you accept a girl like that? No, we're a Beis Yaakov here, So she said, okay, fine. Okay, I'll be right back. So she runs to the local store. She buys a couple of teals. She comes back, puts it on, says, okay, I'm covering my hair. Can you accept my daughter now? So the teacher's like, she thought she was serious, but he said, you don't just put on a tichel and that's that, there's more to it. So he says, listen, I can't make the decisions over here. You have to speak to the minhelet, the principal. So she says, fine. So she has a meeting with the principal. The principal takes one look at her. She got the picture, we're talking about over here. And she says, I really don't think so. You put a head covering on, but there's more to it. And we're afraid it's going to affect the other girls, because you're not, your daughter's not really religious and stuff like that. And I'm sorry, Anyway, she was very strong and she really wanted her daughter in there. She wasn't going to take no for an answer. So she found out which gadol was the, nasi of the school, head in charge of the school. And she went to him and told the whole story, how she really wants to go into the school and this and that, and they won't let her. Da, da, da. Anyway, so the gadol made the shikul, he weighed that situation, called the principal and said, I spoke to this woman and I want you to accept her daughter to the school. Okay, the gadol told her that. Anyways, for some reason, like we said before, this woman, this Minahela, this principal, she has her ideas, and you can't, that's it. The God of the door tells her to accept the kid, no. Says, I don't care, I'm not accepting, it's going to be a bad influence on the girls, I'm not accepting. The God of the door, not listed to the God. Anyways, what happened in the end? She didn't go to the school, obviously. And the girl just, you know, grew up, you know, chiloni, and she just went from one thing to another, and she turned out, you know, really not good stuff. And what happened was interesting. The end of the story, though, has a somewhat of a happy ending, that the gadol eventually died, you know, as years went by. And when this girl grew up, she one day decided to start a new life, and she said, no, I'd like to become from. So she went to this school, like, you know, Baal Tshuva Yeshiva, you know, type thing, to sign up to start, you know, going back to her roots. And she, the day that she came to this school to sign up was the yort site of this gadol that died. And that day, this minahelet, this principal, she went crazy. So something happened to her and she went totally crazy. Was on the yard site, and that same day that this girl signed up for the school. So it's interesting because it reminded me, there's somebody who used to live here on the Moshav many years ago. He was a Baal Tshuva, and he told me, it reminded me of the story, because he was a Baal Tshuva, he became from. So he told me once how he became from. And he said, similarly, he said he was an electrician. And but a big time, he had big jobs or whatever. So it was many years ago. They decided, I think it was in Rishon LeZion where he used to live. They decided to put in buzzers in order to get into the gun. You know, so you don't anybody just walk right into the gun. Then you'd have to press a button, and then it you know beeps in, and then the teacher can come and open the door. So it's a big contract to go through all the ganim, you know, all the kindergartens in the city, and you know, put in this buzzing device, whatever. So they have to put in the different electricians put in their bids. Anyway, so he won the bid and he got the job. So what happened was he said it gave me a chance to see the different, you know, kindergartens from the different, you know, some were religious, not religious, whatever. And he said, I was so impressed by the, you know, religious kindergartens, you know, the way the kids are and the thing, the chinuch, whatever, and compared to how, you know, the other, the kids are wild and crazy they are and the other. So he said, that's it. I'm sending my kid to a from school. And he, even though he didn't live in the from area, he sent to the other side of town. As soon as his kid was age to go to gun, sent him to the from gun. And, you know, one thing led to next. The kids go to the from gun, comes home and says, hey, you know, where's the Shabbos candles, where this, whatever, whatever. And then lot did thing until the whole family became from. So to conclude, this one last story. Also, that reminded me. I just saw Mamas the Shabbos along the same lines. There was also a woman. This is in the 1950s, I think it's. There was a woman who was who lost her husband in who was killed. Her husband was killed, I think, in the war or something, and she was left with her son. So a little baby. So she, again, totally non-religious, lived in Tel Aviv. And the kid when he turned about 5 years old, her son, so people that work with, you know, the Kiruv organizations, they kind of got a hold of her and said, you know, your son's now eligible to go to, you know, school, whatever, why don't you send him to a Talmud Torah, you know, from school, whatever. So he told her how good it is and how, you know, they come out like mention and, you know, trying to give her a good speech. And she agreed. She said, okay, you know, sounds good to me. So sent the kid to the other side of town. Again, you know, nowhere in their area. It's a totally fry area. So. And the kid went and he was very successful. He was doing very well. And he grew, he's like, long payas, and, you know, tzitzis, and the thing, and he said, you know, go through the streets of Tel Aviv, and go, you know, back and forth from school every day, and there's almost a kiddush Hashem, you know, because they don't see this around that area. And the kid, you know, every day, back and forth, and things were going really good, the kid was really steigen, and until one day, this woman's relatives, they're all, you know, not from, and she herself wasn't from, but she, you know, obviously respected sending her son to the school. But her relatives were starting to speak to her about it and said, what are you doing? Why are you sending your kid there? And look, he looks like a joke, you know, like a clown, you know, with his hair sticking down, his strings hanging out of his pants and that. And they kept making fun of him. And so first she was there, so, you know, she was still, you know, happy how her son was turning out and stuff. But eventually it got to her. And she said, yeah, maybe you're right in this. And sure enough, one night, while the kid is sleeping, she takes her scissors and cuts off his payas. So the kid wakes up the next morning, you know, looks in the mirror, and he screams, says, "What's wrong?" He says, "Where are my pants? What are they?" So she shows him it's in the garbage can. And he's like, "Why did you do that? Why did you cut my pants off?" So she goes, "Ah, who needs to pay us?" And it's not, whatever, looks funny. Yeah. Anyways, the kid was like total shocked. And he had no father. He had nobody to, you know, cry to go to for support or whatever. And he just like cried and ran out of the house. And he didn't go to school. He just, you know, walked around the streets and just wandered around the streets. Came home that night, still upset. He didn't go to school the whole week. So the principal of the school is wondering what's going on. The whole week the kid doesn't show up. So he, you know, contacted what's going on. So the mother said he's, I don't know, he's roaming around the streets, you know, lately, last few days. The principal says, oh. So the kid eventually, a week later, you know, he kind of was wanted to go back to school already. So then eventually he went back. He showed up to the school. So they said, well, not so fast. You have to go to the principal. He goes to the principal office, says, where have you been? So he says, oh, I've been wandering the streets, you know, last week or whatever. And he like looks at him. Okay, so sit here on the bench. So he has a meeting with the teacher's teacher or whatever. And the boy's overhearing, you know, the meeting a little bit. And saying, what should we do with them? You know, it looks, doesn't look good. He's starting to feel, you know, warm and running around the streets and this, and afraid he's going to have a bad effect. You know, he's a rotten apple. That's the expression they use. You know, he's a rotten apple. And maybe we shouldn't keep him here. So the principal said, listen, this is a serious decision. You don't just, kid, you know, kid, throw a kid out of school. We have to ask advice of a gadol. So, sure enough, they asked the gadol, and the gadol said, listen, if the, you know, kids are getting a bad influence, whatever, what can you do? There's no choice. You're going to have to, you know, have to send them out of the school. So they, sure enough, they sent the boy out of the school, and that did it for him. You know, from that day on, he was just downhill all the way, and he just grew into, you know, of course, lost every little bit of Yiddishkeit he had, and went completely the other way, started getting involved with crime, and with the police, and this. Eventually, he ended up in jail. So, finally, finished a jail term, but eventually, one day, he, you know, got out of it, and that principal Yid, you know, that he remembered when he was a little kid, you know, walking through the streets of Tel Aviv, with his, you know, payas and sitsas, he remembered it, and he decided that that city is going to go back. Now he's going to go back. So by now, that gadol that had, you know, paskin that they kicked him out of school, he wasn't alive anymore. He's already buried in Bnei Brak. So he, so this man, he now made his way to Bnei Brak. Now with keep on his head, tzitzis, whatever, he goes to the cemetery where this gadol is buried. He approaches the grave, and he says, listen, he says, it's true. He says, I understand. I was a rotten apple, maybe. Maybe, he says, I was a rotten apple. And maybe it's true, I could have maybe influenced the other kids bad. And he says, I'm not here to, you know, question your psak. Okay, your psak was a psak, but I just decided to come here to make you happy. I want to show you that this rotten apple now became an apple that is not rotten anymore, it's cured, and it's fresh, and it smells good, and I'm a new apple now. So that's another story in this vein of, you know, Gdolim, okay, we have emunas hachamim and follow what they say, for the good or for the worse, it's always, you know, Shemayim, it's always for the best, and that's our only hope, like we said before, to make sure we stay on the right track, and if we stay on the right track, we can hope to grow and become a great Talmid Chacham.